You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our friends and partners over at the Draft app. Go to draft.com or download the Draft app and use the promo code LORockets. You can play in a real money fantasy basketball draft for free just by using that LORockets promo code. Well, folks, Christmas is over. Unfortunately, the Rockets' losing streak is not 112-107 losers on Christmas night against the Oklahoma City Thunder. That extends the Rockets' slide to three games. They're now 25-7 on the season through their first 32 games. That's still tied with the Warriors for fewest losses in the Western Conference. And at the moment, the Rockets do hold a tiebreaker over Golden State. But of course, that will be decided in large part by those two meetings in January when the Rockets take on the Warriors next Thursday night in Houston and also on Saturday night, the 20th. So two primetime games at Toyota Center coming up against the Warriors. That's going to go a long way towards deciding that potential race for the number one seed. As far as where things are today, as far as relative to where we last left you, first off, apologies for not having a show for a few days. Fortunately, the Lockdown Podcast Network is supportive enough. They do get us some time off for the holidays to be with our families. Hopefully, you guys got a chance to be with some of your friends and family as well. Besides that, did not do a show after the second game of the three-game losing streak. That was the Clipper loss on Friday night, which, in my opinion, was marred a little bit by some officiating controversy. Certainly, it was not the reason the Rockets lost, but there were just some unprofessional things, most notably allowing Juwan Evans to stay in the game after blatantly committing his sixth foul, mistakenly given to Lou Williams, who was over 10 feet away. The Rockets have since protested that game. We expect to know the results of that within 5 days. We'll see whether it happens today or not. I'm personally not too optimistic that the protest will be upheld. I do think there's at least some chance, though, so it's worth staying tuned for that. But I didn't do a post-game show on that, partially because the holidays were coming up, and also partially I didn't want to give off the impression that I was blaming the Rockets, or blaming the officials, excuse me, for the Rockets' loss. Now, it certainly didn't help, but the Rockets had many things of their own to blame for it. I thought it would strike the wrong chord if I let my frustrations with the way that game was officiated sound like I was speaking to an overall assessment of the Rockets at that point in time, which I know is what a lot of you guys tune into this show for. So, with that kind of in the rearview mirror, I want to focus on what we see now, which, even though the Rockets played better on Christmas night, it's still the third consecutive loss. And after the Rockets came off a stretch going into that with 14 straight wins at 20-21, I know that's a tough pill to swallow. And I guess what I want to start off with is giving credit to Oklahoma City. Because, folks, this is a phenomenally talented basketball team. I know I and many others around the league have given them grief for the start to this year when they began 8-12, and the reason we've given them that grief is because the product on the floor was obviously less than the talented pieces that they have on that roster. At some point, that team was always going to come together. That's why I've always said for the playoffs, I don't care what their regular season record is, I'd rather them be on the opposite side of the bracket relative to the Rockets. I'd rather the Warriors have to go through that second round series, assuming the Thunder aren't able to get to a top three seed. If they're going to be 4, 5, 6, somewhere in that range, I'd love for the Warriors to have to go through that pain rather than the Rockets, because Russell Westbrook, Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, say what you will, two of the three, Westbrook and Anthony in particular, have been very inefficient this year, but when they're all clicking at one time, they're a force, and of course we know how they are in that environment. You add to their big three, Steven Adams, who is an absolute beast on the interior. He had 15-10 Christmas night against the Rockets. Then you have the length of Andre Roberson. It's a tough team when they all cluck. That hasn't happened that much this season, but it did on Christmas night, as I sort of feared it would on that stage. Again, this is the same Thunder team that, even when they were struggling off to the 8-12 start, they beat the Warriors by, I think, 20 or so right before Thanksgiving. They can get up for big games, especially at home, and all three of their big three, Westbrook, George, and Anthony, all shot 50% or better from the field, which is phenomenal when you factor in the volume of shots. Westbrook took 24, George 15, Carmelo 12. Again, all shot over 50% or better. Carmelo shot 8 of 12, which is two-thirds. So give them a lot of credit. When they play that well and the Rockets are without Chris Paul, the Thunder are simply the better basketball team. And I know that sounds harsh when the Rockets are 7.5 games up on the Thunder. They're 25-7. The Thunder are 19-15, actually 8 games up in the loss column. But the reality is that that's A, a result of the Rockets having Chris Paul. That's a big part of that calculus. And B, the Thunder don't always play to their full capability every night. But when the Thunder, when they are juiced for a game, as they were on Christmas night against the Rockets, when they were against the Warriors a month ago, and if the Rockets are without Chris Paul, the Thunder are just a more talented team. And we should also mention the absence of Luke Bamute, because certainly having his length, his intellect defensively would go a long way towards defending the long, rangy athletes that the Thunder have, guys like Paul George, Carmelo Anthony. But the way it was, I thought the Rockets' effort was good. James Harden, 29 points, 14 assists, 8 rebounds. Harden was a little sluggish from the field, 7 of 18. That was mostly because he was just 3 of 11 from behind the arc. But, folks, he had 14 assists to just 1 turnover. I thought he was dialed in. The effort was good. He played 39 minutes. Trevor Ariza had 20 points, played a team-high 43 minutes again. He's been the Iron Man they've needed the past couple of weeks in the absence of Bamute. Clint Capella inside, what a tremendous showing it was from him. 19-10 in 30 minutes against Steven Adams. This was the same building, the same opponent in terms of the Thunder and Steven Adams that he wilted against at times in games 3 and 4 of the playoffs last year against the Thunder. He stood up in a big way, even after missing 3 of the past 4 Rockets games with that bruised heel. Capella came back. A, he played 30 minutes. That's a good sign because, as I've said before, I think Capella can give you 30-plus minutes if that's what the Rockets need. It's just you want to keep it lower than that if you possibly can because, of course, there's a lot of pounding that goes with the territory with having a big man like that. And certainly, if you have someone like Capella coming off a knee injury or a foot injury, excuse me, you want to be more manageable with those minutes if you can. But when Capella needs it in a tight game, he's capable of giving you more minutes. And then on a efficiency basis, 9 of 14 from the field. He stood tall against Steven Adams. He played well. Rockets as a team, James Harden, as I said, 14 assists to just 1 turnover. I thought he was on point. The bench players, other than Nene, who was 2 of 7, Bryante Weber stepped into a rotation role the last 2 games and played relatively well, especially on the defensive side of the floor. I find it hard to be that critical of the Rockets' effort in this game. I think, by and large, they wanted it. They essentially drew the Thunder to a standstill on the glass. Rockets with 38, Thunder with 40. Rockets shot a respectable 32.5% from behind the arc. Not great, but certainly not terrible. I think just 13 turnovers for the Rockets, actually one fewer than 14 for the turnover. In general, I thought the effort was there. It's just the Thunder made a lot of particularly difficult shots down the stretch in the fourth quarter. The Rockets couldn't match it when they don't have Chris Paul. That's just the way it's going to go in a lot of these matchups, especially if those big three for the Thunder are all connecting from the field. There's only so many ways you can defend it if guys are going to make contested shots, which the Thunder did. The other thing that encourages me, as I said, the injuries for the Rockets, to me, correlated directly with what the Thunder did well in this game. Because you look at where the Thunder found success defensively, as I said, the Rockets certainly could have used Luke Bamute's length against the likes of George and Anthony. I know you still have Ariza and Tucker, but A, Ariza's being overextended a little bit, as Mike D'Antoni's alluded to. Certainly, it's he deserves to be commended for playing that many minutes and kind of helping the Rockets get through the this rough patch in the schedule with injuries. But 43 minutes, it's very possible late in the game that can take a toll on his defensive energy. And P.J. Tucker, it's not that P.J. is a bad defender by any stretch. 4 steals, 4 rebounds in his 29 minutes, but he's a different type of defender, whereas Luke does it with a lot of the length, the intellect. With P.J., it's the brute physicality, it's the toughness. And in this particular game, when P.J. was a minus 10 in his 29 minutes, that's the worst of anyone on the Rockets. This was a game, in my opinion, that was less about that brute physicality in terms of the guys he'd be guarding, like Paul George, like Carmelo Anthony. It was more about just sheer length. And what we saw from PJ, because he's not as long as Luke, he felt like he had to reach a lot. Thunder got a couple of cheap fouls against him, especially in the fourth quarter, because they were taking advantage with how physical he felt he needed to play to compensate for a little bit of that lack of length. So defensively, you could have used Luke in that capacity. Offensively, folks, this is just not a matchup where you can expect James Harden to take over and be Superman down the stretch, because there's just so much length everywhere from Robertson, Paul George, Carmelo Anthony. If he drives, there's Steven Adams. There's just so much length. You can't just expect James Harden to make everything happen one-on-one in terms of the defense. Of course, the Thunder had the capability of switching a lot, but in addition to that, they tried that kind of Spursian principle, what I would say. They dropped that big man back a lot on the pick and roll. They gave up the mid-range shots, which few players on the Rockets are equipped to or willing to take. Chris Paul would seem to be the perfect antidote for that because he's able to take advantage of that mid-range game. If that's what the defense is going to give up, that's something the Spurs have traditionally done against the Rockets. We saw that some down the stretch last night from the Thunder. In addition to that, just the lack of predictability that comes from having Chris Paul. One of the reasons that teams like the Spurs and last night the Thunder are able to kind of put the clamps down late in games against the Rockets' offense is that it's very predictable. As great as James Harden is, when the game slows to a crawl and they're not able to get out and run, it becomes very predictable how the Rockets are going to initiate their offense, and that predictability leads the defense to get in a rhythm. If you have Chris Paul able to make plays on the other side of the court, then you have to account for that as well defensively, and the game plan is not going to be as predictable. So I think having Chris Paul back out there, certainly he's a top 10 player, but I think he directly correlates with some of the predictability issues that I thought led to the Rockets struggling a bit on offense in the fourth quarter, just 19 points after scoring 31, 26, and 31 in the first three quarters respectively. I think Chris Paul out there would have been the perfect solution for a lot of the things the Thunder were throwing at them defensively. And then on the other side of the court, for the Rockets, when they were on defense, I think Luke Bamute's length is what you need to have Carmelo Anthony, who shot 8 of 12, and Paul George, 8 of 15, get some more contested looks. If there's something to be frustrated about, I'm not telling you that you guys should feel all sunshine and roses today as the Rockets wake up on a three-game losing streak, 25-7. The frustration should be about the prior two games, because if you bring that level of dedication, even without Clint Capella, because I know he's a big part, Nene, 2 of 7 in his 14 minutes, 6 points, 3 rebounds, I'm starting to get a little concerned about when and if Nene is going to round back into the form we saw from him last spring. Still not even to the halfway point in the year, so I don't think you can officially press the panic button, but it's okay, in my opinion, to have a wary eye on that. And I think we'll get to, throughout a lot of shows this week, if the Rockets go after another depth move, as we've heard alluded to from Daryl Morey recently. Wouldn't surprise me if it's at that center spot, because I think you'd like to have another rim protector back there. You can certainly feel the absence of Clint Capella, even in the 18 minutes that he did not play on Christmas night against the Thunder. But in general, other than that, the effort was just not fully there across the board in those Lakers and Clippers games. And you could see the habits building a little bit against the first few games of the homestand, the Bucks, the Pelicans, then the Jazz when the Rockets had that great comeback. But there were long stretches of those games where the intensity was just not there. Of course, you can correlate it with the Luke Bamute injury as well. Saw a stat last night that over the past six games, the Rockets defense has slipped to 29th in the NBA in the past six games. Not a coincidence, that's the six games that Luke Bamute has missed since his shoulder injury at basically the midpoint of the Charlotte game 2 weeks ago. So, again, if there's anything you want to be frustrated about, I would say you look at the intensity, how well the Rockets played Christmas night in Oklahoma City, even without Chris Paul, even without Luke Bamute. You apply that to the prior two games against the Lakers and the Clippers, and even with the center issues, not having Capella, having a sluggish Nene and Tarik Black playing the majority of those minutes, if you have your other players playing the way they did in OKC, then I think you probably win at least one of those two games. And so if you want to be frustrated as we come off of this Christmas night loss, that to me is where your frustration should be. Because in terms of the effort in Oklahoma City, I thought it was pretty good. I was encouraged by what the Rockets did. It's not going to be an easy way to get out of it, because the upcoming back-to-back, both on the road at Boston, at Washington, these are both quality teams. Chris Paul's only going to play one of them. So it's certainly not going to be an easy fix for the Rockets, at least in the short term, to kind of get off the snide, get back to their winning ways. But I saw a lot of things to be encouraged about Christmas night, and if you want to be annoyed, I think it's fair to be annoyed more about what didn't happen the last two games of that homestand, because if you bring the intensity, even taking Clint Capella out of the mix, if you bring the intensity that you did in Oklahoma City to those prior two games at Toyota Center, in my opinion, you're not on a three-game losing streak, and you're not tied with the Warriors in the loss column. You're probably if you at least take one of those two, in my opinion, as the Rockets wrapped up that seven-game homestand. Now, to talk about these issues and a few more, I'm going to be joined momentarily by Adam Clanton. He's a friend of mine. He's also, you know him from a lot of places. He, on Rockets Radio, he does pre- and post-game analysis, also some color commentary during the games with Craig Ackerman and Matt Thomas, the two play-by-play guys. Adam is also the host of The Bottom Line. That's a daily sports talk show on Sports Talk 790, the official flagship of the team. Comes on at 3 to 6 p.m. every day. On Twitter, you can follow him at Adam Clanton. He's one of the better voices in the Rockets community when it comes to basketball. I always enjoy his NBA analysis. Haven't had him on the show yet, but, well, just as we got Matt Thomas to pop his cherry a few weeks ago, felt like this is a good time to get Adam in as well. So I'm going to get his thoughts on this and a few other Rockets-related themes in just a few moments. But while I'm getting him connected, I do want to throw a shout-out to our awesome friends and sponsors over at the Draft app, because without the support of wonderful sponsors such as Draft, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do, the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. And folks, when the Rockets have an off day, as they did on Tuesday, as they do on Wednesday, folks, I know basketball still goes on, so if you want to get in on the action, if you want to still feel connected even when the Rockets are off the court, the best way I've found to do that is to play fantasy hoops. And folks, if you're a fantasy sports guy, in my opinion, Draft is where you need to be, because your chances of winning are literally 80% better than on salary cap sites. That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site, because folks, you're not getting crushed by the pros anymore. And it's not just me saying that either, because literally more than 1 million people have already downloaded that Draft app. You can literally play in a real live NBA draft right now, be done in under 5 minutes, and get paid out the next day. It's so simple, you don't even have to worry about setting your lineup with injuries. You can customize your lineup each day. There's drafts filling out every second. And then even if there's an injury, folks, the Draft app will take care of that for you. So it's very low maintenance. It also gives you a lot of customization. And, well, drafts fill out literally every second, so you can join one whenever you want. But the best part of this deal for my listeners here at Locked In Rockets, all new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. That's if you use the promo code LORockets. That's right, you can play in a real money draft for free. They give you a $3 ticket just by using that LORockets promo code. And Draft is so confident that you'll like it that they're even offering our Locked In Rockets listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100 if you aren't satisfied with the service. So to try it out, just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with the promo code LORockets. It's pretty easy to find. There's a locked-in fantasy draft every day, and I've been setting up drafts every week. I'm going to set it up, I'll say late morning on Wednesday. Search for Locked In Rockets, and you can play with me in our pay draft if you are so inclined. So jumping back into the show, I let off the first few moments of the program giving my initial thoughts on what happened against Oklahoma City. But I know this podcast is not just about me. We want this to be a place where Rockets fans can get analysis from around the association, get broader perspective about what's going on with your local basketball team. So to get that, can't think of much better local voices in terms of basketball on the Houston scene than Adam Clanton. As I said on Twitter, he's at Adam Clanton, but you know him from Rockets pre- and post-game coverage, also color commentary, very involved in the Rockets radio network, and also host of The Bottom Line. That's the daily sports talk show on Sports Talk 790, the official flagship of the team. So without further ado, let's get Adam connected right here on Locked On Rockets. Adam, what's going on, my friend?
Hey, how you doing, Ben?
Doing well. Glad to finally get you here on Locked On Rockets. I know not exactly the most ideal of days. I was sort of thinking to myself, we look at this from two different perspectives. You know, your audience, you've got a lot of diehards in your audience, but at the same time, there's a lot of mainstream component too, which is a blessing and a curse. For me, I deal with only the diehards. You've got both the diehards and the mainstream, your Jamaica-esque folks. So when you saw when you had the loss last night, explain to me your level of annoyance with losing a game to that, the Thunder of all teams.
Yeah, that's a game where if it's played 2 weeks ago, it probably goes very differently for a number of reasons, not the least of which was Chris Paul not being in the lineup. But yeah, it's a slippery slope, a tightrope I've got to walk sometimes, because you know I do get paid by the team to broadcast, but I'm like you said, I'm a diehard fan. I've been in here in Houston since I was a little kid, and I grew up rooting for this team, pulling for this team, like all the teams in town. And so you kind of have to balance the fan in you versus the broadcaster in you. But, you know, I log on to Twitter, you know, that death trap that we all know and waste our lives on. And I see the Bleacher Report has a graphic with the Thunder sending the Rockets home, you know, for a loss last night. And the graphic includes the big three there in OKC. And it's got a rocket with James Harden and Chris Paul, you know, tied to it, being launched into space. I'm like, well, that's curious, because I didn't see one of those guys on the floor last night. And, you know, I usually blow that kind of thing off, but I look, it's like, you know, their Instagram account has 6 million followers. Their Twitter account has 5 million followers. That's a pretty big audience to kind of paint a broad and incorrect stroke brush with, you know, on how that game went down. And that's frustrating to me because in the era of fake news, if you will, regardless of whatever side of that you fall on, I think it's important that, you know, if you're going to do something like that or if you're going to report on a story or talk about a team, that you do so as accurately as possible. And it goes back to the MVP race last year and a lot of other things. I just don't think that sports, just like any stories, are always covered that way.
No, I don't think they are either, especially, as you said, with this particular Oklahoma City team. And I pushed back against a few because I had a few folks getting on me after it, quote-unquote, Thunder fans who were, you know, just, I would say, rather jubilant. And of course, any fan base is going to be excited when they win, especially a spotlight game like that. I'm not naive. I've been a fan myself. I get how the whole thing works. However, what I tried to point out, of course, was that the Rockets have played the Thunder 9 times within the past calendar year, and this is only the second time that the Thunder have won one of those games. And then, of course, you get into, well, what happened against the Spurs, and I said a million times, folks, the Spurs weren't just a better team, you know, in Game 5 and Game 6. Spurs were a better team all year long. It's not as if the Rockets choked, and it sure as hell did not invalidate the results that the Rockets had against the Thunder before that. And, of course, on Twitter, I point that out, and people say, well, why are you bringing that up? You know, let us enjoy the win. And my response to that is, the Rockets in the past week, they also lost to the Lakers and the Clippers. However, at the same time, you don't see nearly the noise, I would say, from the fans, from the media, whoever it may be, in support of the Lakers and the Clippers, because there's just kind of this understanding that, hey, that's one game out of 82. The Rockets are obviously dealing with a ton of injuries, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas with Oklahoma City, it's a very annoying issue because, you know, you can just kind of feel the backdrop, and maybe I'm too sensitive, and I don't think I am because I think you kind of have the same view that I do. You can sense that a lot of these accounts, you know, they view the Rockets and Thunder as kind of comparable teams. And in reality, no matter how you want to slice it, as I said, the Rockets won 7 of the last 9 games, including 4-1 in the playoffs. This season, they're, even with the loss last night, the Rockets are still up by 8 games in the loss column, which is an enormous thing at 33 games into the year. So, Adam, my contention, what's so annoying about the Thunder to me is that it feels like there's a desire to make the Thunder and the Rockets rivals. And at this point, maybe it gets there eventually, but the Rockets have head and shoulders been a better team over the past 14 months. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of the same with the Spurs. Well, first of all, the Spurs series, I don't know what that has to do with the Thunder series, so any Thunder fan bringing that up is just ridiculous, but I digress. And it's also interesting that the Rockets are, again, 8 games ahead of a team that they were 8 games ahead of last year when Russell Westbrook won the MVP. But that's another argument. As far as these two teams go, I mean, naturally, the star power is there. And if you want to talk about, okay, let's do an arms race to see who can you know, dethrone Golden State fast enough, it looked like the Oklahoma City Thunder had themselves a really nice offseason. And it was interesting to me to see the two teams' off-seasons covered. Because when the Rockets traded for Chris Paul in June, the first thing you heard was, well, that's two ball-dominant point guards. I don't know how that's going to work. The first thing you heard when Sam Presti, in my opinion, had a bag of beans to get both of those players, really. I thought the Paul George and the Carmelo Anthony trades, the Rockets, for example, could have offered better packages in both scenarios, but people want to tell me that it was all about Ryan Anderson. And people, just to kind of go down that road real quick, people have no idea what they're talking about when it comes to where Anderson would have gone in either of those deals. It wasn't to that team. That's the interesting part. It was the third parties that were actually ready and willing and able to do and pull the trigger. And it was a team with the player coming back to the Rockets that actually nixed both of those trades.
Yep.
And that's something we can discuss at a different time. But going back to these two, yeah, it's natural to say, hey, I want to see a team with James Harden and Chris Paul and their role players and high-flying offense go up against a team that has a quote-unquote big three, especially now that they've supposedly figured it out. That's my favorite part, is a guy like Royce Young last night saying, well, the Thunder beat them, and looks like they figured it out. And maybe they have, you know. And I don't think a lot of teams are going to say, hey, I can't wait to play the Thunder in the postseason if they do start putting it together. But to say that and to say, oh, it came against the Rockets, it came against this version of the Rockets, which, again, did not include Chris Paul or Luke Bamute. And people talk about Luke Bamute. He's not that big of a deal. Yeah, he is. Their rating defensively was either fifth or sixth before he went out, and since he's left, it's in the mid-20s. So don't tell me that a guy who plays really good defense off the bench and can provide some offense is not that important of a role player.
Yeah, and I think especially so against the Thunder, because when you look at the Thunder, Paul George, Carmelo, even Robertson, who's not an offensive player, but certainly he can make cuts away from the ball, there's just so much length. And when you don't have Bamute, you have Ariza, although right now I think some of Ariza's defensive effectiveness is not quite all the way there because you're having to play him so many minutes because you don't have that many options. It's not just the Bamute. You don't even have Troy Williams to throw in at a pinch. So you have Ariza playing 43. P.J. Tucker can step in, but to me at least, Adam, it feels like P.J. isn't quite as ideal of a matchup for the Thunder as Bamute is because, you know, P.J.'s more of a pest. He's more of your physical, your brute physicality type guy, whereas with Bamute, he's the length that you probably need against guys like Carmelo, who went 8 of 12, and Paul George, who went 8 of 15. So it just felt to me like that was a particular matchup where not having Bamute's length meant a lot. And then, of course, the flip side of it, Adam, you look at the offensive side with Chris Paul. I know the Rockets only had 19 points in the fourth quarter. The offense ground to a halt. Well, again, look at that length. Look at Steven Adams in the middle. That's not a team that James Harden can just beat 1-on-5 and you can just say, James, take over. Because NBA teams with that caliber of defense, that caliber of length, can figure it out. I think what you need in that situation offensively is a secondary playmaker, somebody that can, well, create action on the weak side, also step in and hit some mid-range shots, which Thunder were giving up. Unfortunately, last night, the Rockets didn't really have either a candidate that could take that kind of shot and make it. So to me, both sides of the ball, offense, defense, Chris Paul, Luke Bamute feel pretty critical for that particular matchup, correct?
Yeah, and that was another funny thing that I was getting brushed back on Twitter from Oklahoma City Thunder fans, and they are a very boisterous bunch.
Yes.
They, you know, what Chris Paul is owned by Russell Westbrook. I just like, wait, you have not seen these two teams play together at full strength yet. So I don't know how they're just like automatically assuming something like this is going to happen, something like this is going to happen. You make yourself sound no different than these pundits who just assume that Harden and Chris Paul wouldn't work together because they were both ball-dominant point guards. I think what you're talking about, the word you mentioned, defense, is the key to all of the Rockets' problems right now. James Harden, kryptonite is, the length is his kryptonite on the offensive end. We've learned that. Kawhi Leonard, there you go. And even when he was out, the Spurs and the way they played defense on him last season, it showed down the stretch. Same with Robertson and guys like that on the Thunder that can give him problems. Length gives James Harden problems, but if James Harden has Chris Paul out there on the other side, it's a whole different dynamic, one that, by the way, again, we have not seen yet. But on the other end of the floor, every bit of the Rockets' problems right now is defensive-related, even the offense, I think, because you mentioned Trevor Ariza's minutes. I mean, he's overexerting himself so much to be that guy right now. They don't have that rotation defensively, and it's showing. And remember, go back to last season. Right around Christmas, I think the Rockets beat up on the Mavericks, and Patrick Beverley was yelling down the hall at Mark Cuban right around this time of year. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where they peaked, in my opinion. They were never consistent after that. Clint Capella broke his leg in January, and it just they didn't sputter to the finish line, but they weren't the team that was the juggernaut leading up to Christmas like this team has been this year. And I'm not saying the same thing's going to happen. I think far from it. I think this team, when healthy, is built to contend, at least for the Western Conference. But they've got to get healthy, and they've got to get healthy defensively, and I think you'll see the difference. Yeah, I worry about this Boston game a little bit, but I just feel like the sooner you get Chris Paul back, the sooner you get Luke Bamute back, and you get those rotation guys. You know, I thought Clint Capella looked a little rusty last night because he's missed 3 of 4. That's another key defensively. It all goes back to it, and people who are still saying, oh, Mike D'Antoni's teams have never played defense, they're not paying attention, they're not educated, and they're going with narratives that have been put out there by, you guessed it, places like Bleacher Report, places like, you know, fill-in-the-blank national media, whatever, that just put out these narratives and blind sheep will just follow it. This Rockets team has been very good defensively when healthy, and I think you'll see the difference when they come back and get those players they're missing.
Yeah, and I think the difference between this year and last year with regards to peaking in December or early January, last year they had the two win streaks, 10 games in December, 9 between the end of December, early January, is that last year you didn't have any reserves coming back the way you do now. You have something, you know, kind of still in your back pocket, of course, with the returns of Chris Paul, Luke Bamute, getting Clint Capella still more back in the flow. I did think, you know, you could see a little bit of rust from a, you know, defensive execution standpoint last night. Offensively, though, I did like how he went at Steven Adams, who was pretty physical around the rim. He looked a lot more aggressive to me than he did more comfortable in Game 3 and Game 4 of the playoffs last year in Oklahoma City. So I take some small positive from that. But the bigger point, Adam, you know, in regards to the defense and what happened last year versus what happened this year, what happened last year, you know, you were essentially overusing everyone, and then there wasn't that piece to come in and then give a little bit of rust to the remainder of the roster, whereas, you know, within a week or so, you're going to have both Chris Paul and Luke Bamute back, and so if any guys like Trevor Ariza are overextended, there's a pretty clear avenue to sort of roll them back a little bit to get them that second win that maybe they couldn't a year ago. But Adam, all in all, what I thought of last night, of course you never enjoy losing to the Thunder for all the reasons we've outlined in the first 10 minutes or so. But at the same time, I was less upset than I was after the Lakers and the Clippers game. So certainly the Clippers game, there were all sorts of bizarre officiating stuff too. But even aside from that, you know, against the Lakers and the Clippers, even with the injuries, if the Rockets' full effort, if their full defensive focus and intensity were there, they probably do not lose those games. Whereas last night, overall, I thought the intensity was pretty good. You could tell they wanted it. Harden was efficient, had 14 assists to one turnover. Capella had 19 and 10 against Steven Adams. They did a lot of things right. It's just a matter of if the Rockets don't have Chris Paul, if they don't have Luke Bamute, and then the flip side, every single guy in Oklahoma City's big three shoots 50% or more, Westbrook, Melo, and Paul George, then it's not like the Rockets underachieved. It's not like they just did anything wrong. It's just, you know, you combine Oklahoma City shooting that well and the absences to the Rockets just got outgunned. It is what it is on the road, and I'm kind of pleased that they hung in as well as they did. If you want to be upset, to me, the games to be more upset about are the two against the Lakers and the Clippers that you let slide at Toyota Center last week. What do you think about that?
No, I agree. I mean, you're talking about a big three in Oklahoma City that you mentioned all scored 20 or more. In the case of Russell Westbrook, he scored 31. They're clicking on all cylinders. The Rockets caught them in a groove where they had already won four in a row coming in, and everything went right shooting-wise, like you mentioned, and they did it against a team that didn't have Chris Paul and Luke Bamute, and they were at home, and they won by five. Congratulations on your NBA Finals championship in December, but I have a huge problem with the way they lost those games to the Lakers, and particularly the Clippers. Listen, anytime Austin Rivers has career high against you, that's cause for concern defensively. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, at least Lou Williams, we know, scored 48 earlier this year, and we saw firsthand that when he gets hot, he's kind of got that Vernon Maxwell gene where he's streaky, right, and when he's hot, he's hot. Austin Rivers has no business scoring 36 points against anybody, let alone the Rockets. And that honestly sickened me. I know the officiating at the end, you know, Juwan Evans shouldn't have been in that game, but that's not why the Rockets lost. Right. The Rockets lost that game because they allowed 14 of 23 three-point shooting in a second half, and Austin Rivers was doing a big part of it. It's embarrassing. The Lakers, Kyle Kuzma with a career high, he's a rookie, very confident, and I think the Lakers are quietly putting together a nice stable of talent. They don't have a key guy, if you will, yet. I know they hope to get one that wears 23. We'll see how that goes. Those two teams had no business beating the Rockets, even with their most upstart guys playing the best night possible. The Rockets' defensive intensity, it just keeps going back to that. And you mentioned it. I think it was decent at times against the Thunder Christmas night, but they're going to have to get back to where they were, and that's going to take health first and foremost. But then once they get healthy, they can't just assume it's going to happen. They've got to shore up, you know, transition. They've got to shore up rotations and everything that was making them a legit top 10 and sometimes top 5 for parts of this year defense in this league. And until they do that, there's not going to be a lot of winning streaks to speak of.
Adam, we heard Daryl Morey, GM of the Rockets, of course, on the Woj ESPN show the other night, the simulcast they did with the Lakers-Warriors game, that was after what happened in the Clippers game, and of course the headlines where he was alluding to the possibility of a protest, which they've since filed over the whole Juwan Evans situation. We'll see what happens. with that. But the more interesting takeaway, you know, they asked him about potential roster moves, knowing, of course, the Rockets do have an open roster spot right now. There's also the issue of Daryl Morey's history of always looking at trades. And, you know, he certainly didn't sound like a guy who was looking for any kind of major move, because when you look at the rotation, it's hard to see a clear upgrade that, you know, you don't have a Corey Brewer spot like you did last year that's just, you know, sticks out like a sore thumb. However, what he did say was that, you know, they're looking for depth moves, and of course they could look in terms of trades, they could look with buyout candidates because they have that open roster spot. But Adam, what I wanted to get your take on is if they upgrade one spot from a depth perception, from a depth standpoint externally, where's the spot you go? Because for the longest time, Adam, my thought was that you might look at the guard spots. However, if they're healthy, and that's a huge if, but if they are, with Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, James Harden, those minutes are spoken for. I like what I've seen in a relatively small sample from Briante Weber defensively. The spot that I'm curious about right now is inside in terms of rim protection, because what we've seen over the past week when Clint Capella has missed three games, Clint Capella is the one piece that the Rockets do not have a winning record without. You know, they even have a winning record without Chris Paul, without Luke Bamute, without Eric Gordon. They have a losing record. I believe they're 1-3 when Capella doesn't play, and it's because there's no one else that can really fill in for his skill set. Tarik Black, it just seems like whatever reason, his offense is not where they expected it to be. There have been some chemistry issues on the pick and rolls. Nene, you hope he will pick it up in the playoffs the way he did a year ago, but he's 35 years old. There's a minutes limitation. Also, at 35, he's just not that able to move side to side anymore. To me, if I can add one piece, I might be looking a little bit at the big market. We know, for example, last year, buyouts, they looked at Andrew Bogut, even though he ultimately decided to go elsewhere. Not saying Bogut in particular, but one more option that they can trust to kind of protect the rim. Because what stood out to me over the past week with this defense, Adam, is that without Clint Capella, there's just not really an option that Mike D'Antoni trusts that can consistently protect the rim. And then without that, everything else just sort of seems to collapse. That's the best way I can describe it.
Yeah, I look at Clint Capella, and I think it sets up a very interesting offseason because he's going to be a restricted free agent. We know, you know, who is going to be out there, and I think is going to give the Rockets a very, very hard look. In fact, I would favor the Rockets to be the guy, or the team, I should say, that would get that guy away from where he's leaving. I'm doing this without tampering, you see
right.
what I'm saying?
Yep.
You know, we all know about those rumors, but I think that should that happen, I wonder if the Rockets still match any offer that Clint Capella gets, and I say that because I think the guy's going to get paid one way or the other because of what you just talked about, what he does so well, and that's protect the rim. He's a guy that is your prototypical, wow, he's made that jump every single year he's been in the league. He went from a project that Daryl Morey drafted, and I think a lot of people, you know, people like to criticize Morey's drafts, and for whatever reason, and I get that, it's probably not his strong suit if in the grand scheme of talking about his resume, but I don't think they give Daryl Morey enough credit for finding a guy like Clint Capella, who, again, as I mentioned, has improved leaps and bounds every single year. And so, yeah, if you're looking right now defensively, when he goes out, it's a huge drop-off. I love Nene. We all love him, you know, but he's not that guy defensively, and he can't be relied upon to play even in back-to-backs right now at this stage of his career. So you mentioned Tarik Black. He's had his moments. But you're right, and I don't know who that guy is. I haven't sat down to take a look at the list of guys that
Same
would
here.
Be available or, you know, in whatever scenario to get that guy here. But I do think that whether Clint Capella stays or goes after this season too, but even right now, you do need a little bit more depth in that area, and to be able to have a guy that when Clint Capella goes out, you don't have to worry about the numbers dipping or, God forbid, the record dipping like you mentioned.
Final topic for you, Adam, before we sign off. There's a narrative out there with regards to Chris Paul and his durability. And I'm not going to say that it's unfounded because I understand, even if it's bad luck, he's missed about half the year this year. He's 32 years old. A lot of folks put two and two together, especially the more casual fans, and I get it. However, I do think that, as with anything, you can take it overboard. And it's sort of bothering me a little bit how much skepticism is out there over Chris Paul making it healthy through a playoff run. Because when you actually look at the data, and I'm sure you have, just like I have, I posted it last night, every season this decade, he's played at least 60 games. every in the past 3 years, he's played 74 or more games, two out of three, including 1 year in which he played all 82. Now, has he had some nicks and bruises here and there that have cost him 10 to 15 games? Sure he has, but most players around the NBA do. It's my contention. I think Rockets are actually a little bit spoiled by just how out of this world James Harden is with his durability, with never missing any time. The fact is, most guys around the league, they do miss time. Look at the Warriors even. They were without Kevin Durant a month last year. They've already been without Stephen Curry for at least 10 games this year. They've been without Draymond for a while because of the shoulder. It's just, it stands out less because, of course, they have so many damn stars that, you know, there's so much insulation. You miss one and they're all of a sudden able to keep clicking. Whereas with the Rockets, you only have two stars at that level. If one of them's out, you certainly feel the impact more. But when you look at Chris Paul's actual history, and Rockets fans I know want to know, can you count on him for a playoff run? Do you buy in? I'm not seeing anything with regards to a particular injury or his history that says you should be overly concerned about this guy. Now, I'm not saying it's easy, but at the same time, I just don't see a reason to expect the other shoe to drop. He's got his nicks and bumps, just like a lot of other guys have their, you know, lumps and bruises along the way. And if the Rockets manage him, if they manage him correctly, which, you know, at 32 years old, that's part of why he's missing so many games. You know, the Rockets are being uber conservative, trying to make sure he's ready to go come April and May. While I'm not going to sit here and guarantee that Chris Paul will be ready to go, at the same time, I don't really see a reason to be overly pessimistic about it either. Curious what your take is on that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's the great catch-22. I don't know if that's the right analogy. You want Chris Paul to be healthy so that both he and James Harden's minutes are limited. but if you can't get him back out there to do that, James is going to play more minutes and inevitably down the stretch could suffer from fatigue again, if that's what you want to blame last season on. So it's crazy because you want to get Chris Paul back to solve that problem, but you don't want to rush him back, especially with the injury that he has. Look, I have no problem if the Rockets don't play him on Thursday against Boston or the following night in a back-to-back situation, because I just don't, I don't care as much about late December games as I do him being ready to go in late April, for obvious reasons. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know, I remember when the Rockets played the Clippers in that epic seven-game series where they came back in Game 6. You remember Chris Paul, I believe, didn't play in Game 1 of that series?
Game 1 and Game 2.
Right, both. That's what I thought. Well, he missed both games here in Houston. So, and the Rockets ended up winning that series, but it was hard fought. I don't know that the narrative is correct. I just know that this season is what I care about right now. I really, it's like a lot of things that float around out there. I can choose to get really mad about it, and sometimes I do. We're all guilty of it. Or I can just say, well, all I can judge him on is what he's done since he's worn red. And when he's in the lineup, they've lost one time. And so getting him back is the most important thing, so that not only you can get those numbers that you're looking for, but also that you can dial back the minutes all around in all the rotation, including James Harden. You know, Chris Paul coming back doesn't just affect, you know, Chris Paul. It affects everybody. And, you know, we all talked about Mike D'Antoni's seven-man rotation in the playoffs last year and how it looked like everybody ran out of steam. The best way to combat that later on is to get those guys healthy and back in the lineup so you can start to tailor back a little bit on those minutes and hopefully help those guys to last down the stretch. But I don't worry about Chris Paul because I think he's a gamer. I think he's going to go. And I think you're right. The narrative's kind of overblown about him. Yeah, he gets nicked, just like a lot of other players do, like you mentioned. But he answers the bell if he can, when he can,
yep,
especially come playoff time. And I like the Rockets' chances if they get him back and healthy.
Yeah, definitely. And last thing for you, we heard from D'Antoni before the game last night that they'd probably play him one of this upcoming back-to-back in Boston and Washington. My guess is that he probably plays on the front end only because you've got a three-game and four-night stretch coming up with Boston Thursday, D.C. Friday, and then the Lakers here in Houston on Sunday, New Year's Eve. I'm just spitballing here, but if he's ready to go, he did go through a workout last night. And Boston and Washington, they're both kind of comparable teams in terms of their skill. Both are very good. Both are on the road. My guess is that you probably play him on the front end to give him one more night off to make sure that, since it's a muscular injury, it heals up. Any thought on that? Or is it, like you said, you don't even really care that much because it's late December and it's just about getting him healthy when it matters?
Yeah, Yeah, I think, you know, Boston, and Boston has played very well to start out of the gate, especially with the Gordon Hayward injury, but I've never been convinced, oh, they're really a threat. I mean, they might be a threat because they're in the East, and the East is just terrible outside of a few teams. But you're basically, what it comes down to is say, okay, do I want to chase around Kyrie Irving or do I want to chase around John Wall? That's basically what you're looking at, and neither one of those guys, I think both of those guys would give your adductor strain a nice test drive to see where you're at. And I like what your theory there, because if indeed that's how the Rockets medical staff is looking at it, they'll know real quick if he's in playing shape. But I would hate for him to aggravate that just to kind of see if he's ready.
Sure.
But you do have that, you know, he's going to have a full week off by the time he laces him up again because of the layoff after this Thunder game. It's kind of a quirk in the schedule. You've got that light week at the beginning and then the 3 and 4 nights like you mentioned. So I think you're probably right, but I also wouldn't be crying myself to sleep if he sits out both of these games and comes back on New Year's Eve.
Right, and that way he'd have a full week and a half off, and then after New Year's Eve, I think you don't play again until the 3rd. So other than this back-to-back, you've got a lot of time off in the schedule these couple of weeks. So certainly there's a lot of ways they could go with it, and yeah, avoiding the back-to-back is the most important thing, I think, and it sounds like they're pretty forward that even if he's 100%, there's no reason to put him through a back-to-back scenario unless you're even 100% sure. Even if you're only 99.9, there's no reason to go through the back-to-back. So I think we're in full agreement there. Adam, thank you so much for the time, buddy. Before you go, toss out, pretty much all your plugs, your Twitter handle, your show, what you're doing with the Rockets. Just tell people where they can find you if they're not already following and listening to you already.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at your own peril, Adam Clanton, Clanton. It's all one word, Adam Clanton. Put an underscore in between those two names if you want to go the Instagram route. And then I got a personal Facebook page that kind of doubles as a public one. There's too many accounts to run and not enough hours in the day if I really want to make a public page like that. But, yeah, you can find me on all three of the main social brands. And then I host The Bottom Line on Sports Talk 790. Every weekday afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. here in Houston, that's Central Time. And I'm off this week, so you won't hear me on that show, but that's been fun. And then obviously I do the Rockets network studio hosting duties, which includes pregame, halftime, postgame. And then on home games, I'll chime in as I sit next to Greg Ackerman. So it's been a lot of fun. I've really, really enjoyed starting this gig with the Rockets. I want to keep it going. And I think they've been happy with me, but it's been a joy because, like I said, it's a team that I've grown up rooting for. I remember being in junior high when they won the back-to-back championships, and that was good times. So, it's been a lot of fun, and I really enjoy the interaction. So if you want to debate, if you want to chime in, you want to just drop a line, that's how you can find me. And I've really enjoyed being on the podcast as well. You're an American treasure, Ben. You know that.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Glad to get so many of the 790 folks in the... I had no idea that you guys had so much interest in it either until you and Matt both volunteered yourself. And I'm like, sure. You know, I've been nagging Craig to do it forever just because, you know, he's Craig. He's with the team. And I know Craig has... You know, he's got a lot of downtime, especially because when you're on the road, all of a sudden those afternoons you've got a lot of time to kill. So I've nagged. But yeah, it wasn't until past couple of months with you and Matt nagging at me. I'm like, dude, if y'all went on, let's do this, man.
Well, I heard Craig's podcast, to be honest. Full disclosure, I saw the link on Twitter, so I listened, and I just sat there and listened to the whole thing because I just love basketball. I really love NBA basketball. And so before I knew it, I just sat there and listened to the whole thing, and I was like, oh, that was cool. So I think Craig and I had talked about it. And then once you have Matt on, we have that competitive fire here at the station. So and we're actually really good friends off the air. So I just gave him a hard time about it. But, yeah, I reached out to you and appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Adam, thank you so much for the time, and we'll have you back on very soon. Okay, buddy?
You got it, man. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Adam Clanton. Good stuff. Glad to finally have him on the show. Hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. He's a really insightful basketball guy. Host, in my opinion, he and Matt Thomas are the two most Rockets-focused daily talk shows that there are. I know the Houston sports scene gets a lot of grief from Rockets fans, but of course it's so disproportionately targeting the Texans because they have a lot of casual listeners. Also, it's football. And, you know, I'm a huge Astros fan, so I'm certainly not going to blame anyone that covers the Astros a lot because, A, I mean, you go back only a couple of years ago, you couldn't find any Astros talk in this town, and B, they just won the World Series. So, of course, it's deserved. But at the same time, between the natural fixation on football and obsession with that here, and then the Astros winning the World Series, I know there's a lot of situations where the Rockets can get the short end of the stick, at least right now. I'm sure that'll change in the playoffs, of course. But for now, it's tough on a day-to-day basis to find Rockets talk. And I'm hoping that's why a lot of you guys found me here at Locked On Rockets. But if you do on a regularly scheduled program at a certain time every day, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, from 12 to 6 on 790 between Matt Thomas and Adam Clanton, their shows back-to-back, that's about as good as it gets when it comes to regular Rockets talk on the Houston AM and FM radio dials. Anyway, thanks again to Adam for joining us, and as always, thanks to you guys for listening. I think that'll about wrap it for today. If you want to follow me on Twitter for more real-time updates, you can do that at Ben Dubose. You can follow the show at Locked On Rockets, or you can visit our website, LockedOnRockets.com, or our Facebook page, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Those are new initiatives throughout the past week. If you want to reach out to me, the best way to do it is on Twitter or by email, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. That's where you can submit questions, comments, or inquiries about how to become a potential sponsor of this program, just as Draft was today. Remember, Locked On Podcast Network has Draft Wednesday every single week. So, folks, that means, well, they're sponsoring our show. But to take advantage of it, go to draft.com or download the Draft app and then use the promo code LORockets. And from there, you can play in a real money fantasy basketball draft for free. They give you a $3 ticket when you sign up and you make that first deposit. And it can be as little as you want. And as far as when you draft, they've got drafts literally going down every minute. So you can customize it on your schedule, on your timetable, ultimate flexibility. Again, that's draft.com or the Draft app. And I strongly encourage you to support them if you aren't already, because support of sponsors like that are how we're able to bring this show to you, the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. And once again, that promo code is LORockets. So until Thursday, I will sign off. That's when the Rockets take on the Celtics, front end of a back-to-back. That's a nationally televised game on TNT, so all of you guys should be able to see it. Then Friday afternoon, that's when the Rockets take on the Wizards on the back half. I say afternoon because that's a very early start time, 6 o'clock locally. Of course, the game is out in D.C. So apologies again for our brief absence the past few days due to the holiday, but we're going to be back in the game mode I would say starting today, certainly, and moving forward the next couple of days as well. We'll be back to the daily show that you guys have come to know and love us as. And of course, if there's any news regarding the Rockets protests, personally, I'm not that optimistic that it gets upheld, but I think there's certainly some chance, because you have to pay $10,000 to formally submit a protest, and the Rockets waited the full 48 hours before they did. So that tells me that they weren't just going to submit it for the hell of it. They probably waited to get some feedback, and they think there's at least a chance that this could have a positive resolution. So if we get news on that and it's unexpectedly positive, and that the final 3 minutes and 10 seconds would be replayed at that Clipper game, then we'll break in and give you some reaction to that as well. Until then, folks, I hope you enjoy the rest of your Christmas holiday break, whatever you're doing. Have a great time with your friends, your family. It's a good time of year. And then, yeah, days to come, Rockets have a very busy stretch coming up. Celtics, Wizards, Lakers, 3 games in a 4-day span. And we will have you covered on a regular basis right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. Until then, have a good one, folks.